Experience a full mind, body, and spirit approach to living your best life. Learn how to achieve optimal health, wealth, and happiness. This is your journey to wellness and abundance. You are listening to Mind Over Matters with your host, Dr. Amy Harris Nguyen of the Center for Integrative and Functional Health and Wellness.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Harris Nguyen. As you know, I'm a double board certified integrative and now interventional clinical psychologist with a postgraduate specialization in functional medicine. I'm also a certified wellness instructor, best-selling author and speaker, and the director of the Center for Integrative and Functional Health and Wellness. Welcome to the show. As you know, the purpose of the show is to get you thinking about how powerful your mind is and what you can do right now to change your life for the better. So this show, Mind Over Matters, will challenge you to think differently about how your health can be improved, how your relationships can be improved, even how your financial health can be dramatically improved. All of this by taking a more holistic approach to your life. So my goal is to educate and empower you to live your life by design, a life on purpose and with passion and with positive results. So welcome to Mind Over Matters. You know, it's that time of year where a lot of us are experiencing some loneliness. And so I want to ask you, are you experiencing loneliness or isolation? For some of you, maybe not now, and that's a really good thing. But if we're being totally honest with ourselves, all of us have felt lonely and alone at some times. Even the most cheerful and positive people experience these very human feelings. But what does it all mean? And can it affect more than just how you feel? Well, on this show, I'm going to answer these questions and more. Welcome to Lonely Days, Lonely Nights. I'll be reviewing an article written recently by Lynn Darling. And the question really is there a cure for loneliness? Well, we know that older Americans are at a greater risk for social isolation, for example, which can lead to physical illness, depression, even dementia. But scientists now say there are medical causes and remedies for a painful condition that affects more of us each year, that being loneliness and isolation. So I want to start the review of the article by sharing with you some research written by Steve Cole. He's actually a genomics researcher. And the article starts by saying he had never really thought much about loneliness and the pain that it causes until he looked into a molecular microscope at a small sample of white blood cells, and what he saw changed his life. And now you're probably thinking, what the heck does this have to do with loneliness? And that was my first thought, too. Well, surprisingly, the sample was one of several that had been taken from a handful of very lonely men and women. And Steve Cole's observations were actually quite startling. Actually, in each of the samples, the blood cells appeared to be in a state of high alert, responding the way they would to a bacterial infection. It was actually as though the subjects were under mortal assault by a disease, that being a disease of loneliness, and it shocked the heck out of them. But even more surprising to Cole, a professor of medicine and psychiatry, as well as biobehavioral sciences at UCLA's School of Medicine, was the public reaction to the subsequent study he co-authored when he originally published it in 2007. Dr. Cole said the impact at the societal level, you know, it really kind of shocked me. As an academic, he was used to publishing findings that interest scientists, but not really the general public. And I think we can pretty much agree. If you've ever read, a research report, you know, it'll almost always put you to sleep. So, but he was surprised at what the public reaction was. Instead of, you know, receiving, you know, feedback from fellow researchers, now he was receiving a steady stream of emails from ordinary people telling him how grateful they were for the work he was doing and sharing stories of loved ones whose lives had been devoured by loneliness. Dr. Cole went on to say, so that led me to respect loneliness as a topic as well as a foe. And that really did set me on kind of a different journey than I had been on at that time. Surprise, surprise. Many of the women and men studying loneliness now express a similar sense of mission about their research. Loneliness, says Louise Hockley, a senior research scientist at the University of Chicago, quote, is a universal human experience. And being the social animals that we are, there must be implications when those social connections aren't satisfied. You know, there's a human need to be embedded, connected, integrated into a social network. And when that social network is missing, the consequences are very real in terms of our mental and physical health. And, you know, you've heard me say on previous shows that, you know, there are some very basic core fundamental needs that all of us have, specifically three core fundamental needs. It's our need for survival, which includes food, clothing, shelter, and now in today's day and age, money, right? Because we need that for food, clothing, and shelter. Sex, as it relates to, you know, procreation and sex appeal, and our ability to have other people find us attractive, because guess what? That affects our third core need, our need for affiliation and belonging. Prehistorically, if you weren't seen as an attractive mate, one that could perpetuate the species and help your tribe stay healthy and survive, you are likely to die either of loneliness or of some other fate, you know, maybe a saber-toothed tiger. But those are our three core fundamental needs: survival, sex, and belonging and affiliation. And now this is being researched more and more, our need for social connection and the devastating effects of loneliness and isolation. According to a study by researchers at Stanford and Harvard, the impact of people living in social isolation has almost a $7 billion a year impact on Medicare, mostly because of longer hospital stays and, as a result, researchers hypothesize, of not having community support at home. A lot of times, that's the only social interaction people will get is when they're hospitalized or when they're in extended care facilities. And that's a pretty sad state that we're in. So not only is there, you know, a dramatic health impact, but there's a financial impact that affects us all on the larger scale. The research into those impacts has produced a wave of headlines, actually. You know, it seems like every day scientists discover more ways in which loneliness can attack our bodies and shorten our lives. Loneliness is a killer. An array of studies have found that it leaves us much more likely to die from heart disease and is also a contributing factor to other fatal conditions as well. In fact, it makes us more vulnerable to Alzheimer's disease, high blood pressure, suicide, even the common cold. Okay, so it's more dangerous to our health, researchers tell us, than obesity, and it's the equivalent of smoking almost a pack of cigarettes a day. Can you believe that? That's crazy. You know, my mom, for a while, lived alone. She lived on her own for many years when she was able to do that. And she lived in a small town in Texas, and it was of significant importance for her to connect with people. She made it a point to connect with her neighbors. They established a good supportive relationship. But there were many times when her neighbors weren't available, and she was quite lonely. Luckily, she got involved in, you know, her local church, sang in the choir. But without that, and without having, you know, any of us kids living nearby, that was a real struggle for her. You know, as she got older and started having some serious chronic health issues, we found it necessary to move my mom in with one of my siblings. She actually moved in with a brother of mine. And actually, he lived in a rural area in North Carolina. And all of a sudden, my mom's support system that she had experienced when she was living in Texas was completely absent. And my brother and his family, they were busy doing their own thing. And the impact was dramatic on my mom's health. She took a dramatic downturn that year. And so we realized that, you know, it was absolutely necessary not only to stabilize her health, but to put her in a position socially and emotionally where she could start to recover. So we made the decision to actually move her in with one of my sisters in Michigan, who had a lot more time to devote to my mom, had a larger support system, and was more centralized in terms of where she lived. And that made a dramatic difference. My mom started getting involved with my sister, some of our, you know, my nieces and nephews, her grandkids, as well as started connecting with a senior facility there. And that actually was the start of an uptrend for my mom prior to her passing. So I saw it before my eyes, the impact that loneliness can have on someone's health, especially someone that's dealing with the health or wellness issues. So it's my hope that this article is going to shed some light on what you can do if you're experiencing any of these feelings of loneliness or isolation. You know, help you understand the overall impact and then what you can do to reestablish a sense of support for yourself. So stick around. You're listening to Mind Over Matters. This is a show titled Lonely Days, Lonely Nights.
Want vibrant health, more energy, improved weight loss, or even better sleep than you've had in years? TI-22 Nutrition has you covered. We offer the best plant-based supplements in their purest form. Our supplements are combined in power packs to create a synergistic effect when taken together. TI-22 stands for titanium, and we are committed to helping you achieve optimal health. Order now. Visit TI22Nutrition.com. Stronger bodies, stronger minds.
Do you or a loved one suffer from depression and medications just aren't working? Do the debilitating side effects associated with most antidepressants make them impossible to take? We can help. At the Center for Integrative and Functional Health and Wellness, in partnership with BrainStem, we offer transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS. TMS is a safe and effective drug-free treatment option that can dramatically improve your quality of life. In fact, the majority of our clients experience a significant improvement in mood, with many achieving complete remission. TMS is FDA approved and covered by most insurance companies for the treatment of depression, and has also been shown to be effective in treating other mood disorders like OCD, PTSD, and anxiety. If medications aren't working for you now, chances are they never will. Let us help. Call our TMS center today at 630-451-8030. That's 630-451-8030. Or visit us online at thecifhw.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Mind Over Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Harris-Nguyen. You're listening to our show titled Lonely Days, Lonely Nights. If you've missed any of the show, you can check out a podcast on this great station, or you can check us out online at www.thecifhw.com. Again, www.thecifhw.com. You can check us out on SoundCloud.com or iTunes, even Google Play. I'd like to invite you to follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/thecifhw. Also follow us on Twitter and Instagram, where we're posting new things every day to help accelerate your health, your happiness, as well as your wellness. And if you've got questions, I want to invite you to send me an email. You can email me directly at healthandwellness@thecifhw.com. Again, healthandwellness@thecifhw.com. I'd love to share your thoughts, answer any questions you may have. If you'd like to schedule a consultation, we are accepting new clients and patients. 630-980-1400. Again, 630-980-1400. I want to give a big shout out to TI22Nutrition.com. That is our nutrition brand of choice. It is a remarkable way to accelerate your health and wellness synergistically. The products at TI22Nutrition.com were specifically devised by integrative and functional medical experts. They are of high quality pharmaceutical grade, prescription only by your physician. That is our physician, and they're meant to accelerate your recovery. If you are experiencing any kind of health or wellness problems, do check out TI22Nutrition.com. And then a special shout out to Copper Fiddle Distillery in Lake Zurich. If you're a bourbon aficionado, or maybe you're a novice, I want to invite you to a tasting out at Copper Fiddle Distillery. So thank you to our sponsors. I appreciate it. And thank you to all of you that tune in every week to support the show. Again, as you know, the goal is to educate and empower you to live a life by design, a life of health, happiness, and a life that brings you positive results. So to that end, I want to jump back in and, you know, share with you this article written by Lynn Darling on loneliness and the impact that it has on all of us. Because the truth is, it doesn't just touch the person that's experiencing loneliness. It affects everyone in that person's circle as well. So the research is actually quite alarming, but for most of us, it can also be confusing. How do scientists even take a look at measuring loneliness? It seems like a ubiquitous, enduring, and universal feeling. How do they turn it into a set of statistics? What's that even about? How can an abstract emotion shorten someone's life? How do we even define a word that provokes so many different meanings in so many different circumstances? You know, most of us are intimately familiar with only one kind of loneliness, our own. You know, I've had the privilege and the honor to work with thousands of people over the course of my career and to be a part of people's healing journey. Certainly, you know, I'm not immune from that as well. I know I've had my own losses and challenges and triumphs. And within those challenges and losses, you know, I've certainly dealt with loneliness and feelings of isolation as well. Sometimes it's hard for us to, you know, really appreciate what someone else is feeling until we've experienced it ourselves. But for the men and women studying loneliness, however, loneliness is a multi-headed mystery. It's known as a shapeshifter whose appearance changes in every mirror held up to it. Some experts find its face in statistics, others in brain scans. Myself, I see it in my practice every day. Still others see it in the behavioral patterns of the people who suffer from it. And together, those in the field of research and treatment deploy a complex battery of methods, designed to understand the impact of loneliness. Researchers, for example, have infected volunteers with cold viruses. They've measured the physical distance that married lonely people maintain from their loved ones. They've deprived college students of their sleep. They've hurt the feelings of subjects playing games against a computer. You name it, there's all kinds of ways to study it. Scientists have studied body language, eye movements. They've built statistical structures and have tracked subjects over years to determine which ones die younger, who gets sicker, which participants contract dementia and suffer from depression. And yet the attempt to take the measure of such an essentially amorphous concept can be something like drawing a map to a country that can only be seen in the dark. It is quite complex to study accurately loneliness, the variations of that, the impacts of that. And many of the alarming statistics about loneliness come from studies that don't actually look solely at the way it feels, but they also examine clues to its presence provided by other more quantifiable factors, that being physical isolation, marital status, the number of close friends and family members someone has, and the amount of television being watched even. You know, one of the things I always ask about when I'm meeting with someone for the first time, and almost always at my follow-up visits, is, you know, I'll ask, tell me about your support system, because I know directly a person's support system is directly related to their likelihood of recovering from whatever it is, whether it's depression, anxiety, whether it's an infection, whether it's a chronic illness. So our social system plays a dramatic role in our health and wellness. So I'll always ask, what's your social support system like? Because we need that to buoy us in times of challenge, in times of change, especially in times of loss. Okay. So the thing is, we need to define exactly what the issue is with loneliness, says researcher Julianne Holt Lundstedt. She's a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Brigham Young University. She says, is it loneliness specifically? Or is it people becoming more socially disconnected in a variety of ways? And until recently, she adds, data on loneliness in and of itself was actually pretty scarce. But there are other kinds of indicators that are routinely collected that would suggest we're becoming less socially connected. And I would absolutely agree with that. We have evidence from census data, for example, that there's been an increase in the number of people who are living alone, and there are declining marriage rates and increasing rates of childlessness. Now, that in and of itself doesn't mean you're going to be lonely or alone, but it certainly is correlated. And we know that lacking social connection puts all of us at a greater health risk, certainly a greater health risk for depression. And researcher Holt Lundstedt acknowledges that people who live alone aren't necessarily lonely, and that there are many who may be nested within a close-knit family and still feel disconnected, right? How many of us have been in a room full of people, including friends and family, and have still felt lonely at times? You know, I certainly have. I remember being at a party several years ago. I was actually dealing with some depression at the time. And here are all these friends and family. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was the only person in the world. It was a crazy, bizarre experience. And that's when it dawned on me. I thought, oh my gosh, Amy, you know, this is what depression is like. You know, here you are surrounded by people you like and love, and you felt, and I felt, completely understood. I thought that no one could possibly experience the depth of loneliness I was feeling at that moment. I was clearly wrong, but it can be an experience just like that, where you feel misunderstood, you maybe feel like you don't have a way out. So social connections play a role in helping bolster our immunity, helping bolster our mood, but we can certainly feel lonely and isolated within the context of close-knit family relationships and friendships as well. Yet a subjective feeling of loneliness, the researcher says, is not the only way to measure a person's vulnerability to health risks. There are objective factors such as living arrangements that may be equally important. Simply living alone or in an isolated place may be just as harmful to your health as feeling lonely. So she goes on to say that she actually co-author of an often cited landmark study that looked at three groups of people who might be seen as lacking sufficient social connection: those who were socially isolated from other people, those who described themselves as very lonely, and those who lived alone. And the study pooled the evidence collected from 70 studies that followed a total of almost 3.5 million participants for an average of 7 years and came up with some startling conclusions. So stick around. When we come back, I'm going to be sharing with you the research that Dr. Lunt Holstead found, and some of it may actually surprise you. You're listening to Mind Over Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Harris-Newon. You're listening to Lonely Days, Lonely Nights.
Do you or a loved one suffer from depression and medications just aren't working? Do the debilitating side effects associated with most antidepressants make them impossible to take? We can help. At the Center for Integrative and Functional Health and Wellness, in partnership with BrainStem, we offer transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS. TMS is a safe and effective drug-free treatment option that can dramatically improve your quality of life. In fact, the majority of our clients experience a significant improvement in mood, with many achieving complete remission. TMS is FDA approved and covered by most insurance companies for the treatment of depression, and has also been shown to be effective in treating other mood disorders like OCD, PTSD, and anxiety. If medications aren't working for you now, chances are they never will. Let us help. Call our TMS center today at 630-451-8030. That's 630-451-8030. Or visit us online at thecifhw.com.
Want vibrant health, more energy, improved weight loss, or even better sleep than you've had in years? TI-22 Nutrition has you covered. We offer the best plant-based supplements in their purest form. Our supplements are combined in power packs to create a synergistic effect when taken together. TI-22 stands for titanium, and we are committed to helping you achieve optimal health. Order now. Visit TI22Nutrition.com. Stronger bodies, stronger minds.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Mind Over Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Harris-Newon. I'm a double board certified integrative and now interventional clinical psychologist with a postgraduate specialization in functional health and wellness, also certified wellness instructor, best-selling author and speaker, and the director for the Center for Integrative Functional Health and Wellness. If you're just joining us, welcome to the show titled Lonely Days, Lonely Nights. We're reviewing an article written by author Lynn Darling on loneliness, and the results may surprise and shock you. If you would like a broadcast or a rebroadcast or a podcast, you can check us out online at this great station. Certainly, you can check us out online at thecifhw.com. Again, thecifhw.com. If you've got questions, comments, I'd love to hear from you. Please send me an email at healthandwellness@thecifhw.com, healthandwellness@thecifhw.com. If you're experiencing any kind of loneliness or isolation or health issues as a result, please make sure to see a really, really good healthcare provider. Access your support system. Make it a point to get involved in your community. Give us a call if we can help you on that journey, 630-980-1400. Again, 630-980-1400. I do want to send a shout out to TI-22 Nutrition for help bolster our physical health and wellness. I also want to recognize our sponsor, Copper Fiddle Distillery in Lake Zurich. I have to tell you, they make some of the best bourbon. Again, whether you're a novice or aficionado, highly recommend checking out Copper Fiddle Distillery. They do some great tours. It's actually a lot of fun. So welcome back to the show. We're talking about a very serious topic, especially a topic that affects all of us at this time of year, whether directly or indirectly, and that's loneliness, loneliness and isolation. And the truth is, as much as we're connected via social media and technology, we've never been more socially disconnected and isolated in our entire history of humanity. You know, we like to think that, you can just connect, you know, at the touch of a screen. But more and more people are isolating themselves behind their screen, whether they're gaming all the time, whether, you know, they're on their phone, whether they're on their laptop. It is a time where people are experiencing a lot more loneliness and a lot more depression. So there are remedies for this, but I think it's also important to understand the impact, because if you're dealing with this or someone you know or love, helping them understand the impact could be the first step to helping them recover from those feelings of loneliness and isolation. So I last left off talking about a landmark study by author Julianne Holt Lundstedt. She's a professor at Brigham Young University. She actually pulled evidence from 70 studies that followed almost 3.5 million people for over a 7-year period of time and came up with some startling findings. Each of these groups faced the same increased risk of early death. 32% of those living alone faced an increased risk of early death. 29% of those who were socially isolated for others faced an early risk of death. And 26% for those who described themselves as very lonely. That's like potentially cutting off a quarter of your life because you're lonely and isolated. The study found that it didn't matter whether the participants were healthy at the time of the study either. You know, people say all the time, is that being lonely that makes you unhealthy, or is it because you're unhealthy that you withdraw from others and they withdraw from you? The author asks. Certainly, physical and mental health issues can put you at risk for loneliness and isolation, but the evidence we have is independent of health status. So whether or not you're healthy, those who are more socially connected live longer. So it really speaks to our need for belonging and affiliation. Conclusions like researcher Holt Lundstedt's are drawn by analyzing dozens of longitudinal studies. These are studies that are eloquently designed research that span several years and projects that follow groups of individuals for sometimes 10, 20, 30 years and track the development of or changes in the subjects that are participating in the research study. So such analyses help to determine, for instance, whether loneliness can lead to dementia or is the result of it by tracking which condition appeared first, right? Correlation, cause, those kind of things. But whether scientists are examining loneliness through a statistical lens, under a microscope, or via behavioral studies, they need a more quantifiable definition from their subjects than the ones found in sad songs and advice columns, right? I think we can all agree to that. Researchers require a way to measure loneliness to distinguish between the feelings summoned by a failed romance or strange faces in an unfamiliar city and those that reflect a chronic, intractable longing for connection that just simply isn't there. The author goes on to say that's one of the first issues we run into when science talks about loneliness. At what point do you say that somebody's lonely? You know, a teenage boy alone on a Saturday night experiences a very different kind of loneliness than an elderly man who lives in a barren apartment and hasn't spoken to anyone for days. And I would absolutely agree. Because loneliness can mean different things to different people, the researcher says, scientists need to measure the condition in a more finely grained fashion, a continuum on which one can define individual as being slightly lonely, moderately, or extremely lonely. And that continuum is found on the UCLA Loneliness Scale, which is now considered the gold standard for defining loneliness for research purposes. Now, there are several shortened versions of the scale, but the original is actually a 20-item questionnaire that asks about feelings associated with loneliness, but actually never inquires about loneliness per se. It's really kind of strange. The questions include, you know, statements such as, I'm unhappy doing so many things alone, there's no one I can turn to. The way in which the questions are worded and the choice of answers means that those who are fleetingly lonely or perfectly content in their solitude will actually end up with scores at the low end of the scale, whereas the chronically lonely, at whom much of the research is aimed, will have scores putting him at the top. And while defining loneliness is a very subjective thing, as we know, it also has very objective outcomes and effects, such as those on our health. But not all scientists are studying loneliness as a complex matrix of contributing factors. Actually, a growing number are focusing on the feeling itself, the intensely personal experience of rejection, disconnection, and longing that some research believe produces a pain as real as any caused by physical injury, and one that has little to do with living arrangements or social networks. And I will tell you, people that experience loneliness and isolation actually are at greater risk for physical pain as well. It can actually be measured. But the researchers are looking at loneliness as the nexus where molecular biology and psychology intersect, creating an intricate dance in which the body and mind take their cues from each other and produce a highly personal, private, and prolonged kind of hell. And research along these lines stems from very basic questions. What's the point of loneliness? And what purpose could it possibly serve? You know, could it be to remind us to reconnect? The whole is greater than the parts, and we're all interdependent. None of us can succeed, whether at business or in life or being healthy physically, without nurturing relationships. We can survive, but we sure as heck are not going to be able to thrive without good, healthy, nurturing relationships. So is there a purpose that loneliness serves? You know, some researchers have looked at it from a very archaeological perspective, a biological perspective, a survival perspective? Well, for one thing, researchers posit that it protects us from danger. Prehistorically, they hypothesized that loneliness could actually protect us from saber-toothed tigers. You know, I'm like, all right, what's that about? But our earliest ancestors, as we know, were social beings. They had to be, otherwise they could not survive, as you've heard me say. You know, those on their own were much more vulnerable to attack, you know, easy picking for hungry predators, as they say. But according to the evolutionary model, loneliness actually may have evolved as a kind of early warning system, a signal that something isn't right, which prompted people to get back to the safety of the group and actually put the body in a stressful state of high alert until you return to your group or tribe. So there could actually be a survival instinct related to feelings of loneliness. And I would agree, if you're experiencing loneliness and isolation, and if you don't find a way to connect, you are likely to suffer both prehistorically and now at your increased risk of dementia, heart attack, stroke, Alzheimer's, depression, anxiety, suicide, you name it. So it's a strange question to ask, does loneliness serve a purpose? But the answer is actually yes. So stick around. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about the subject of loneliness on Lonely Days, Lonely Nights. And I'm going to share with you some other findings that are a real wake-up call. You're listening to Mind Over Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Harris-Nguyen.
Want vibrant health, more energy, improved weight loss, or even better sleep than you've had in years? TI-22 Nutrition has you covered. We offer the best plant-based supplements in their purest form. Our supplements are combined in power packs to create a synergistic effect when taken together. TI-22 stands for titanium, and we are committed to helping you achieve optimal health. Order now. Visit TI22Nutrition.com. Stronger bodies, stronger minds.
Do you or a loved one suffer from depression and medications just aren't working? Do the debilitating side effects associated with most antidepressants make them impossible to take? We can help. At the Center for Integrative and Functional Health and Wellness, in partnership with BrainStem, we offer transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS. TMS is a safe and effective drug-free treatment option that can dramatically improve your quality of life. In fact, the majority of our clients experience a significant improvement in mood, with many achieving complete remission. TMS is FDA approved and covered by most insurance companies for the treatment of depression, and has also been shown to be effective in treating other mood disorders like OCD, PTSD, and anxiety. If medications aren't working for you now, chances are they never will. Let us help. Call our TMS center today at 630-451-8030. That's 630-451-8030. Or visit us online at thecifhw.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Mind Over Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Harris-Nguyen. I'm a double board certified integrative and interventional clinical psychologist with a postgraduate specialization in functional health and wellness. Welcome back to the show titled Lonely Days, Lonely Nights. We're looking at some very surprising research on the impact of loneliness, what it means to you, certainly what it means to your loved ones, and what it means to the broader community. So I had asked the question before the break, can loneliness serve a purpose? When we look at things from a prehistoric perspective, the answer is actually surprising. It's a yes. It was a prompt to us to return to our group to increase the likelihood of safety and survival. The sense of threat that would accompany such a feeling actually found its way deep into our cellular makeup. Inflammation, like what geneticist Steve Cole found in the blood cells that I talked about earlier in the show, were providing a lot of information. On a temporary basis, inflammation is actually a good thing in our body. It's the body's first system of defense, helping to combat an infection or maybe repair a wound. But what works as a short-term response can be a deadly response when inflammation is ongoing, when it's chronic, because inflammation amps up biological processes leading to tissue breakdown and the impairment of the immune system, which in turn increases our susceptibility to conditions ranging from heart disease to Alzheimer's, as well as brain inflammation that leads to depression, anxiety, can exacerbate PTSD, you name it. You know, we think that human psychology interprets loneliness as a kind of threat, and that this kind of inflammatory response is a biological reflex that gets triggered whenever we experience threat or uncertainty, Steve Cole explains. Inflammation then sets up a vicious cycle. When you feel lonely, your brain activates inflammation in the white blood cells, he says. Well, one of the weird things that we've discovered is that inflammation talks back to the brain and changes the way our brain works. What appears to happen? Well, after loneliness stimulates the white blood cell inflammatory response, the response feeds back to the brain and makes it irritable, suspicious, prone to negative emotions, and fearful of meeting new people and making new friends. So it actually sets you up on a vicious cycle. It's really, really crazy. And those negative emotions set up an intricate loop of psychological responses, says Stephanie Capacchio. She's the director of Brain Dynamics Laboratory at the University of Chicago Pritzker School of Medicine. What's happening, she observes, amounts to a kind of duel between the body and the brain. The body, responding to millions of years of evolutionary conditioning, wants to be with other people, but the modern lonely brain, under the influence of the inflammatory response and heightened levels of stress, senses a threat in its encounters with others and chooses to isolate further. So it really is a vicious, dangerous cycle. Your body has a different survival mode than your brain has, notes Capacchio. And while the body has a long-term self-preservation mode and wants to approach others to survive, the lonely brain has a short-term self-defense mode and sees, erroneously, more foes than friends. And in the lonely state, the brain is misreading social signals that it should read normally. Suddenly, it doesn't have the correct translation. You put someone who is lonely in a room alone, and every person who comes there will be perceived as a threat. Lonely people, she continues, often misread facial expression or tone of voice, characterizing curiosity as hostility, for instance, and gradually develop a distorted reality about the social world around them. And that unconscious sense of threat can lead to an endless behavioral cycle in which a lonely person, in a mistaken attempt at self-protection, actually sends out signals of disinterest or even hostility, which causes other people to withdraw from them. And those who are lonely live at such a heightened level of alarm that they actually lose sleep, too. Their brains are set to respond with greater alarm to words such as reject and bully than to other negative words like vomit. Isn't that crazy? And in one of the lab's recent behavioral studies, married lonely people stood further away from loved ones, reflecting their preference for greater interpersonal distance. You know, you can be in a relationship, as I said earlier in the show, and still be very, very lonely. Answering the question of what strategies might ease the loneliness crisis is one of the biggest challenges researchers in the field are now facing. Because there's no one single cause, loneliness might require very different approaches, says researcher Holt Lundstedt. And she compares the challenge to the one posed by obesity, a condition that also springs from multiple sources, including nutrition, genetics, and family environment. And like obesity, she observes, loneliness carries a stigma that hampers efforts to help those who suffer from it. It's another reason why she prefers to talk about social connection rather than loneliness when confronting the problem. She says it helps to remove some of the stigma because loneliness implies in some way that one's a social failure, which couldn't be further from the truth. She says, but if we talk about social connection, that's something that applies to all of us and that we all have to work on. She says it's not necessarily pointing the finger at any one individual or group. It's a continuum, and every one of us is on that continuum. In fact, Holt Lundstedt would like the relative health of our social connections to be considered in the same terms as other elements of healthy lifestyle, such as diet and exercise, and I absolutely agree. That's one of the reasons I'll always ask my clients, tell me about your social support system. What is that like? Okay. It's interesting to note that research on the ways to help loneliness and lonely people has been decidedly mixed, experts say. One of the most effective methods seems to be cognitive behavioral therapy, which we do quite a bit at our practice, which can help a lonely individual better understand how his or her assumptions and behaviors might actually be working against their desire to connect with others. The late neuroscientist John Kakapoko was married to and worked with Stephanie, whom I mentioned earlier in the show, and his colleagues engaged soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan in a series of quote-unquote social fitness exercises that they taught the soldiers, for example, to look up from their cell phones and talk with the people around them. Well, CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, usually takes place on a one-on-one professional relationship in the office, for example. However, such a highly personalized form of help may be impractical when it comes to treating the growing ranks of the lonely individuals. At the same time, more easily achieved approaches, such as encouraging lonely people to find another at the local senior center, can backfire. Again, putting lonely people together can to make friends simply doesn't work a lot of the times for two reasons. First, loneliness increases self-centeredness, not in a bad or narcissistic way. And second, loneliness makes people more irritable and defensive. And if you put two lonely people together, likely they're going to hate each other after 2 minutes. Not always, but there's a high likelihood of that because of the misperception of how they're reading the other person's behavioral and emotional cues. But that's in part because the lonely people can't get what they need simply from the mere presence of other people. What they crave is core values and shared life experiences, a true emotional connection. And we all need a witness to our lives and people to look after. Our survival and well-being depend on our collective well-being, not our individual might. As you've heard me say earlier in the show, we are all interdependent. You know, which is why something like volunteering helps people in really, really big ways. You know, rural communities may be one laboratory in which to explore solutions that meet the need for human contact and the kind of intimacy that marks that contact as meaningful. The state of Maine, for example, with its scattered aging population, is at the forefront of an approach that relies on community outreach to identify people who are lonely and to help them reconnect and stay connected. Researchers found that they're proud of the inclination of folks in Maine to watch out and care for their local communities. And that is key, you know, getting involved on the larger level. Leonard Kay, the director of Center on Aging at the University of Maine, says, these are your friends and neighbors looking out for you. It's the meter reader, the postal carrier, and your hairdresser all keeping an eye out on their fellow, you know, man or woman, their fellow human being. And that's what was so important to my mom and her community. It was her postal carrier. It was her neighbor. It was the people she connected with at church, the people that are part of our community. And so that's why it's so important to reach out, to connect with other people, to consider volunteering. And you may have heard me say on other shows that people who extend an act of kindness, they automatically get an increased boost in serotonin, one of our feel-good hormones. People who are on the receiving end of that act of kindness, and that could be connecting with a smile or a friendly hello, they get a boost in their serotonin. And anyone that observes that act of kindness, they too get a boost in their serotonin. So we're biologically designed to be connected, to be kind, and to be loving. Stick around. When we come back, we're going to be talking about what you can do to connect with others and resolve your lonely days and lonely nights.
Do you or a loved one suffer from depression and medications just aren't working? Do the debilitating side effects associated with most antidepressants make them impossible to take? We can help. At the Center for Integrative and Functional Health and Wellness, in partnership with BrainStem, we offer transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS. TMS is a safe and effective drug-free treatment option that can dramatically improve your quality of life. In fact, the majority of our clients experience a significant improvement in mood, with many achieving complete remission. TMS is FDA approved and covered by most insurance companies for the treatment of depression, and has also been shown to be effective in treating other mood disorders like OCD, PTSD, and anxiety. If medications aren't working for you now, chances are they never will. Let us help. Call our TMS center today at 630-451-8030. That's 630-451-8030. Or visit us online at thecifhw.com.
Want vibrant health, more energy, improved weight loss, or even better sleep than you've had in years? TI-22 Nutrition has you covered. We offer the best plant-based supplements in their purest form. Our supplements are combined in power packs to create a synergistic effect when taken together. TI-22 stands for titanium, and we are committed to helping you achieve optimal health. Order now. Visit TI22Nutrition.com. Stronger bodies, stronger minds.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Harris-Nguyen. I started the show by asking, are you experiencing loneliness or isolation? Well, for some of you, maybe not now, but again, if we're being totally honest with ourselves, all of us have felt lonely and alone at times. Even the most cheerful and optimistic person experiences these very human feelings. But what does it all mean? And can it affect more than just how you feel? So on this show, we've been reviewing an article written by Lynn Darling that explores the impact of loneliness, as well as the broader impact of loneliness on one's community, on the survival of our species, and then what we can do to better understand loneliness, and then what can you do to resolve loneliness and isolation? How can you get reconnected? So I'm glad you're tuning in. If you're experiencing any of these issues, loneliness, isolation, know that can have a dramatic impact on your health. I want you to call us to schedule an appointment or a consultation if you're dealing with this and it's chronic and you just have not been able to work through it. 630-980-1400. Again, 630-980-1400. If you missed any of the show, I invite you to catch a podcast on this great station. Or again, you can check us out online. It's thecifhw.com. Again, thecifhw.com. If you've got questions, I'd love to answer them. You can send me an email at healthandwellness@thecifhw.com. Again, healthandwellness@thecifhw.com. And know that if you're experiencing loneliness or isolation, it could be the result of a health issue, but your health issue could actually be resulting from these emotional experiences of loneliness as well. So researchers have spent a great many years trying to understand what loneliness is, how it results, and then how we can resolve it successfully. Could the end of loneliness eventually be found at your local drugstore? I will tell you the answer is no, but the authors and researchers have asked an interesting question. That loneliness causes pain comes as no surprise to its sufferers, as we've said earlier in the show, but it has become increasingly clear to medical professionals that that pain is real, notes UCLA professor of psychology Naomi Eisenberger. If that's the case, could the pain be treated? The pain can be treated, but I'm going to tell you, as a psychologist and a functional medicine expert, you have to treat the root cause. We can never simply treat the symptom, because if you're only focused on treating the symptom, the root cause will continue to progress. So in an acute situation, yes, of course you can treat the pain, but you must be responsible and look to understand the underlying root cause. Interesting, though, in one experiment, Eisenberger monitored the brain activity of volunteers while they played an online computer game, tossing a ball to other quote-unquote players that were in fact computers. And when the computer stopped tossing the ball to the volunteer, Eisenberg found increased activity in the regions of the brain involved with physical pain. The more rejected the volunteer players felt, the more social pain the brain registered. The brains of these subjects who took acetaminophen or Tylenol before the game, though, showed less activity in the pain receptors. I don't know that it's a good idea to numb your brain, is all I'm saying. Interestingly, though, Eisenberger is now planning to study whether reducing the body's inflammatory response might in turn ratchet down the loneliness one feels. Participants in the study will be given a standard dose of naproxen, Aleve, a common over-the-counter anti-inflammatory drug, for 4 weeks, during which researchers will test their levels of loneliness. She says maybe Aleve can break that feedback loop where loneliness can heighten inflammation and inflammation can heighten loneliness, and it seems to increase our sensitivity to negative social experiences, she notes. If we give people Aleve, maybe it helps reduce the inflammation. Maybe it will change how people see the world. So instead of interpreting every little comment as something negative, maybe slowly over time, people will feel a little bit disconnected from other people, a little bit less lonely. Here's the caution, though. If you take that stuff for longer than 3 days, it's going to affect your liver. And then it's going to affect your health. So I'm going to tell you right now, I take issue with medicating loneliness. Right? It's an intriguing experiment, but it misses the point totally. We cannot just treat the symptom. And if loneliness is becoming an epidemic, in fact, a pandemic, because we're more socially isolated than at any other time in our history, we're not going to find the answer in a pill. We're going to find the answer in social connections. You know, she says, though, that the hope is that people wouldn't have to take naproxen forever, that they could take it short term, break the loop, and then go out in the world and be less likely to interpret the social environment in negative ways. Okay, in an acute situation, perhaps, but you don't want to dope yourself up to address an underlying emotional and social problem, because that just puts you at greater risk. But research suggests that some antidepressants, those classified as selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, may help to reduce the sense of social threat that underlies long-term loneliness, too. Studies test the neuroactive steroid derived from progesterone, for example. They say it's not as a magic cure for loneliness. It's to help silence the mind that sees the threat everywhere, so therapy can work as addressing the root cause or the underlying, core issue. So yes, sometimes SSRIs can be helpful, but again, in the short term, and if that loneliness is significant if it's moderate to severe. But again, you don't just want to medicate the problem. Always seek to understand the root cause. And here's the truth. More and more people are suffering from serotonin syndrome because doctors are prescribing antidepressants. They're not testing an individual's vulnerability to those neurotransmitters, to the hormones that they're prescribing. And then it can actually create too much serotonin and lead to a life-threatening illness called serotonin syndrome. So you have to be really, really careful. If you're seeing a healthcare provider and they're prescribing anti-anxieties or antidepressants, make sure you ask them to test you first for, you know, your ability to metabolize those, and also do some neurotransmitter testing so that you're not actually putting yourself at greater risk for loneliness as well as greater risk for health effects. Because the truth is, antidepressants and anti-anxiety is one of the most common side effects: more depression, more anxiety. And then what does that do to your loneliness? Now you've just exacerbated that whole vicious cycle. So you really want to look to understand the root cause. But the consequences of isolation and loneliness, they're severe. Negative health outcomes, higher healthcare costs, and even death, said Senator Susan Collins, a representative from Maine. She's the chairman of the Senate Special Committee on Aging. She stated that at a hearing in 2017, she said, just as we did when we made a national commitment to cut smoking rates in this country, Collins went on, we should explore approaches to reducing isolation and loneliness. And loneliness, researchers say, is the discrepancy between what you want from your relationships and what you actually have. And for those on the front lines of loneliness research, the upsurge in public awareness and interest is the most hopeful sign that this distance can be bridged. And I agree. I think the more we understand loneliness, the causes, the etiology, the more we can understand the value of social connections and put people in a position to then create meaningful connections, the better off that person will be, the better off their family will be, and the better off community and humanity will be. You've heard me say, you know, when you heal a person, you can heal a family. When you heal a family, you can heal a community. Well, one of the core ways to do that is start doing some outreach. You know, I would invite you, if you're someone experiencing loneliness or isolation, you know, reach out to someone in your support system. If you don't have a support system, you know, find a good therapist or counselor. Start there. They can help you explore some of the steps to recover from that loneliness. They can help introduce you to ways that you can step out of that vicious cycle where the loneliness puts you at risk of alienating other people, but help teach you some strategies to reengage, to increase your self-esteem, to increase your self-confidence, you know, certainly reduce your risk for loneliness, for depression, for anxiety, and really put you in a position to start living a more happy, healthy, meaningful life. And you ask anybody what's most important, they're going to tell you relationships. They're going to tell you social connections. They're going to tell you the emotional intimacy that is shared and expressed, you know, with another human being. That's why, you know, happy couples live longer, because they're sharing emotional connections. There's a deep sense of emotional intimacy. So, again, I want to invite you, if you're dealing with loneliness, depression, anxiety, please call us, 630-980-1400. We can help get you connected. We can certainly be a part of your healing journey. I consider all of our patients and clients part of our family. They're, you know, immediate family and extended family, because some of them we see, you know, quite a bit. But reach out to someone, okay? Because there are solutions. So I hope this has been an enlightening show. I hope it encourages you to take action and to reach out to someone you love. I want to thank you for tuning into Mind Over Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Harris-Nguyen. We'll talk soon.